He's doing a podcast, for crying out loud, that most of the sports shows in town quote every week because he says something relevant. He does seem to want to be on the front pages. By the way, Twitter, at 93.7 The Fan, brought to you by South Hills Kia, Peters Township. Visit him, southhillskia.net. The more I've thought about this, though, the more I think he's... what I would say after listening to today's podcast, just skipping through it and listening to chunks, he does seem to have his facts in order. I don't know how much you've ever actually like sat down and listened to one of those or popped it on YouTube. When Ben talks, clearly he's either doing his research or the guys that he's with, Spence, are doing research for him, or he's just got somebody checking the numbers. Because he knows who's hurt and who's, you know what I mean? Like he knows that there's a Jets corner missing in that game. DJ Reed was not playing, and he's one of their two best. So he knows what's going on, and he knows the names, and he's not just doing the athlete thing where, well, I watch the games and just figure I know exactly what's happening. He's getting details right, which is so weird that he got the details about the Giants and the Jets wrong. They weren't that depleted, and the teams they're playing coming up aren't very good on defense. In fact, if you are going by what they did against those two teams, especially the Jets, then you should feel like the Steelers are going to put up huge numbers on like the Ravens, on the Bengals, on the Browns. You should feel like 30-plus points is kind of an expectation at this point. And I will say, too, in balance, I'm not with him on the they've got to prove it to me. You know why? Russell Wilson's proven it for a long time. It's the same way I've talked about Roethlisberger. Whenever he would have, this was why it was like so maddening to follow the Steelers during the Pickett year or the Trubisky year, or the, really, I guess you'd call it 22 and 23. Just simplify it and say that. When Roethlisberger would make a bad play in his career, you'd move on from it. Like, once he had gotten into the prime of his career where the offense was all about him and the team was fully built around him, he makes a bad throw. Okay, so what? He makes two bad throws in a row. So what? He has a bad series. They go three and out. He looks rusty. All right, whatever. Great player had a bad series. Like the way you would look at Rodgers or Brady if he ever had a bad one, you would just assume you got a one possession respite from what they would usually do, right? Russell Wilson deserves, I think, even with the way that the 2 years in Denver went, especially the first year, I think Russell Wilson actually deserves that level of deference. Like I've seen two games, that's enough to make me think that the guy is back. That like old Russell Wilson walked back through that door. I don't need to see the Steelers do it against a good defense. I mean, that's like the line of demarcation, or that's the expectation you have for any offense. Donnie, you might have to take this in a minute as I'm about to like choke on my own completely raspy and raw throat. But quickly here, before I let you sound off, you'd say that about any team. I'd say it about Jaden Daniels. Of course, you got to do it against the best defenses, but they've already done that.
Yeah, and I feel like there's just such a culture now where everybody just wants to say that they were right and say, I told you so. And, I mean, obviously that's the business that we're in, and I think we at least do a pretty good job of making up for when we say we are wrong. I mean, I think we were wrong about Russell Wilson on the opposite end. We did not think he would come in here and look this way through two games, and we have already admitted as such. But I think so many people just want to sit back and say, like, see, we told you that Russell Wilson wasn't that good. We told you that the Steelers' offense wasn't that good. They could see the Steelers rattle off, I don't know, four or five good games, and let's say they randomly run into I'm trying to memorize the schedule on the fly here.
I got it for you right now. But they go Commanders on the road, Ravens at home, tour of Ohio, back to with the Browns again, Eagles, Baltimore on the road, Chiefs, Bengals.
Okay, so let's say that they rattle off two more impressive ones where they
beat Washington.
Beat Washington, or the offense looks good and maybe they lose in a high-scoring game. And let's say the same thing against the Ravens where the offense puts up over 30 and over 400 yards. They either win the game or they
lose. Let's say they go at least 1-1. Let's say they go at least 1-1 there and they're 7-3 and the offense is balled out.
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, I'm saying more so just the offense looks really good. Even in losing efforts, the offense is not the issue. And then there's that Thursday night game against the Browns where they're off a little bit. It's a short week, and let's say they have to go to a rock fight style. And, you know, again, they either win or lose, but the offense looks about cut in half as to what it was. We'll still have people. See, I told you, Chris, I knew that Russell Wilson wasn't that good. Yeah. They may have rattled off four straight games of 30 points and 400 yards, but I told you, Chris.
Yeah, you're right about that, and I think that's what I'm trying to say is pretty ridiculous. Sean Payton wanted Russell Wilson gone. He just didn't want to build the offense to whatever Russell Wilson was capable of doing, and I get it. The guy doesn't throw over the middle very often, if at all, and it might seem frustrating. Arthur Smith does not have the offensive reputation Sean Payton has around the league. He seems to have built an offense, and I think Arthur Smith might have actually wanted Fields to stay the quarterback. He seems to have built an offense in two games that can function pretty well with what Russell Wilson's good at, which is dropping dimes into a bucket about 35, 40 yards down the field. I think most coordinators can figure out a way to run an offense when that's the case. And if one of their next three games is bad offense and the other two are good, I'm sorry. Like, I don't care what order they come in, you have to give them the benefit of the doubt because of who the guy is playing quarterback and what the back of his baseball card looks like. By the way, I mentioned there was something else about all this. Speaking of the Ravens, Kabali loves this, right? He's the one who does it. He'll do it after week one if the Steelers are 1-0. He'll say if the season ended today, the Steelers would be the number whatever seed. Season ended today, wild card round. Number 5 seed, Baltimore Ravens, taking on the 4th seeded champion of the AFC North, Pittsburgh Steelers, my friend.
Oh, baby.
Would that be a little juicy? Would that get the... Oh, no, I'm sorry. It would be the 3rd seeded Steelers. They'd be ahead of the Bills.
6-3 seed.
3-6 matchup. I apologize. I don't know why I thought the Bills were ahead. Bills-Broncos, that would be a barn burner. 3-6 matchup. Steelers-Ravens. What do you think the line would be for that game if it happened tomorrow? Steelers at home. Steelers the division champ. Ravens at 5-3. I think the Ravens would still be favored by 3 to 4 points.
That high? I was going to say more like a 1.5. I know that the home team gets roughly a field goal.
Yeah, about a 3-point bump.
Yeah, I think they would have it closer.
I'll tell you what, you know, on this show, I am the more bullish person on the Ravens. Like, hey, guys, watch out. Don't, you know, this guy, Pony over here, when he's here, is practically like begging for that showdown because he thinks Lamar Jackson will turn into a corn cob if they play in the playoffs. I am wary of that team because they look phenomenal. I know they lost last week, and they've got two of the worst losses on paper in the entire league this year. But I will tell you this much about that hypothetical. If it happened, even if the Steelers were on the wild card end of it, having to go into Baltimore, I would feel real confidence for the first time in them in a playoff game in a long time. Maybe not like, oh yeah, they're definitely going to win, where I would get disappointed if they didn't, but I would expect them to go in against Baltimore and hold their own and be there at the end with a chance to win the game.
Yeah,
at bare minimum.
And I think that just shows you how the league has shifted and it's so offensive centric. Like, yeah, you can win with a great defense, but you need to have the offense there to really be a player, because the Steelers have had good defenses. And I'm saying recently, I'm not saying when they last won, which was over 10 to 15 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
The Steelers have had good defenses. They've gone into really doghouses of the AFC. I mean, like big doghouses of the AFC. They've gone into Kansas City and Buffalo.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe in some cases they've hung around longer than we expected, but they mostly got beat up. And it was really never a contest. Like the game in January against the Bills, I think that was one that we kind of felt
they
like
they played
it
on
was
even
closer.
Terms after the first quarter, but the first quarter was a disaster.
Yeah, like it was so bad out of the gate where we wanted to feel like that game was closer than what it really was.
That's the only one of those three games you mentioned where I feel like, all right, if they got off to a better start, I could have squinted because Mason had done it. I mean, Hoagie's got a tweet here, our buddy Hoagie, who he says, here's a hot take. I don't even think it's a hot take. I think it's accurate. He says, I have more confidence in the offense scoring on a great defense right now than the defense stopping a great offense. I'm 100% with that.
Absolutely. I didn't think I would come out 100%. Monday night. I didn't think coming out of the Giants game, I would be more concerned on the defensive side of the ball than the offense.
Well, I also think the rules are still ultimately slanted to favor the offense. It's still just harder to tamp down a really good offense than it is to stop or to score on a really good defense. Like, I just don't think the NFL is set up for still for defense to do its thing. I'll tell you what, man. Like, I think there's growing legitimacy in my eyes. I said this was yesterday's theme, and I only feel stronger about it today, even with Ben saying what he did. They get yards easily now. They look the biggest thing, I don't think I brought this up today. The biggest thing that has opened my eyes with the Wilson two-game sample size we're getting here, we all assumed the running game would struggle more because they wouldn't have that inherent numbers advantage from the threat of Justin Fields. The running game looks better than it did at any point under Fields. I know that the run of 100-yard games for Najee started with Fields' last start, but they have had what looked to my eyes like much bigger running lanes and bigger holes and more explosive runs now. Because I think, you know why? I can tell you why. I don't even have to look at the film and see and be a film guy. A Derek Bell, if you will. If you will. Teams have to respect them and play two high safeties. Because if you play one high safety on them and dare them to pass the ball, they now have a guy who is very happy to do exactly that against you. So if teams are playing a light box against them, guess what? They become a problem in the running game.
Yeah, I finally feel, which is the crux of the whole conversation here, they can actually go toe-to-toe with some of these teams in the AFC. I don't know if they're quite there with Buffalo or Baltimore.
They're relevant,
or Kansas
though.
City when it gets into January.
They should be spoken about like in similar terms, though.
Yeah, they're actually in the conversation. We're not just trying to push and hope that they're in the conversation.
Last year when they got in, what would it have been? 2021, even though it was Ben still playing, they felt like a guy who crashed a party that wasn't supposed to be there. Last year's team with Mason, I will say he played at a level where you thought maybe, but then it still ended up, you know, not looking good. They've looked like an interloper to me. They've looked like a fraud, frankly, for most of these last several seasons. This is the first time I can remember feeling like probably since 2018, if I'm being honest, that they don't have a fraudulent air about them. The 2020 team felt like frauds. The minute Washington beat them, it was here we go. And you can go look. It got real ugly down the stretch there. 2021 was a joke. They were playing pop gun offense. I don't need to rehash 22 and 23. They feel like a legitimate, honest-to-God football team that can beat anybody else in the league now. I cannot believe I am saying that because of Russell Wilson, but here we are.
And imagine a Saturday or Sunday in January, and the Steelers are finally hosting a playoff game. It would be the first time.
Unlimited.
The last time they hosted one was the COVID season, so there were really no fans there. This would be the first time they hosted one since that debacle against Jacksonville.
That is a wild thought to consider. You know what's come all the way back around? I think I remember when it was Aaron Rodgers or Russell Wilson, who would you rather have? I do think I was on Team Russ way back when. You remember that when we were talking about that? You weren't even producing the show back then.
We're going to pull one out of the archives.
I was on Team Russ. Feel validated now. I've only flip-flopped on it 10 times since. Make sure you follow us on Twitter at 93.7 The Fan. That's brought to you by South Hills Kia Peters Township. Visit them, southhillskia.net. It's time for a little thing on this here radio show that we like to call the Hawk Report with Jeff Hathorn, sports director. There were coaches aplenty talking today for the Steelers, were there not, Jeff? I mean, there was a bevy, a plethora of coaches chatting today with you guys.
I mean, I might use the term this time of year, cornucopia.
Really?
Of coaches.
Wow, very seasonal, Jeff. Thank you. That's very impressive.
Yes. I'm all about the seasons. Yeah, it was cool. I mean, it's for us, we wish we got more access. And we wish there were times, especially after when it makes sense with a certain position group, that we had opportunities to talk. But we'll take what we can get. And there was some interesting things about different position groups. So it was cool.
What was the most interesting thing that you heard from all of those chats today?
There were a lot. I mean, let's put it this way. If Zach Azani could have a radio show, that would be an incredible listen. Because he is honest. He's funny. And he's like, he kind of anticipates what questions were coming, but he'll have a funny, remark about what outside noise? What are you guys talking about at the receiver room? or that, you know, receivers, it's like you walk in every day to a receiver room, it's like a bag of Skittles. You don't know what you're going to get because all of them want the football. You know, he said how George has handled it well, so that was kind of interesting, and how it helps to have a Russell Wilson with George, because now you've got a 35-year-old quarterback who knows how to massage that a little bit in practice, to pull him aside, to maybe run him a couple more reps in practice to make him feel better. Like, things like that that are helping, that you may not think about, that are helping with him. You know, or it's Tom Arth, the quarterback's coach, said, you know, Justin Fields was hurt. You know, it's been tough for him, but that he has handled it and says he will do whatever he needs to do. But we haven't had a chance to talk to Justin, so you kind of assume those emotions. But, you know, that was interesting, and a bunch of other stuff. You know, Pat Meyer, the offensive line coach, saying that Broderick Jones needs to be on his details. Like, he's not focused every play, and he needs to be. And that's what's kind of holding him back. So those are some of the things we got today.
Yeah, I thought, and we're going to hear some of that in a Coach's Corner segment, Jeff. Thanks to all of your hard work. Coming up in about 10 minutes, people are going to hear some of those very clips. I wanted to ask you this about their secondary. What do you expect to happen to Beanie Bishop when Cam Sutton, or now that Cam Sutton is going to be available to them for the back half of this schedule?
He's going to still get some time, but, I mean, they brought Cam Sutton in for a reason. And maybe to the Justin Fields extent, while they like what Beanie has done, and obviously he's had 3 interceptions in 2 games. But I think it's going to be kind of like with Justin. Well, wait, you were 4-2. And Tomlin said, we still got to keep our foot on the gas. We think we can get better. I think a similar thing is going to happen with Beanie. Not that he's going to be forgotten. And maybe that first week it's going to be more of Cam Sutton having to work his way in. But, I mean, they brought Sutton in with his experience to play that position. And he eventually, assuming all are healthy, he's going to get more snaps than Beanie.
It's going to be a funny time to have done that, because there will be 3 picks in 2 games for Beanie,
right?
Bishop. I mean, the first one against Rodgers, like a true game-changing situation.
Film study. I mean, that's exactly why you do all that work on a tablet or in a film room, is for a tendency. And he read that tendency at the correct moment. But I don't think it's dissimilar. Justin Fields, they were coming off over 30 points. And why would you make a change? And they've been better. And they think they'll be better defensively with Cam Sutton.
Jeff, anything else I haven't asked you yet that you feel is very relevant right now? I'll throw that question at you early, because I have a couple more for you after it.
I mean, Dante Jackson talking about Deontay Johnson coming was kind of interesting. And he said, well, you know, get a chance to face him twice. He's looking forward to that matchup. You could tell he probably was holding back some of what he was thinking about getting a chance to face the guy he was traded for a couple of times. Nick Herbig says he expects to play again this year. Doesn't know exactly when, but he's optimistic that way. So those are just a couple of other things. I mean, you could go into Najee Harris and how important it's been for him to have a quick start, and what that's led to why we've seen longer runs, because he's happy. As Eddie Faulkner says, he's just happy. Now, all of it starts up front, and all of that is true. If the holes aren't there and the blocking isn't there on the outside, he's not able to spring. But there's, you know, Eddie's just like, man, the guy is happy. And you can see it. And here's one other little tidbit from Faulkner. Ryan Shazier is kind of his assistant right now. He's working with the running backs, and he said they've really been helped by his little tidbits about how a linebacker would approach coming at a running back, and having somebody from the other side kind of give them some knowledge about what those linebackers are thinking. He thinks has been part of this whole, you know, resurgence or early start for the run game.
Jeff, is the Danny Smith stock, has it ever been higher since he has been on this coaching staff?
Nope. I would say the love has been the same. It's been a story now because we've asked about it. It's become a lot more public because they've had success. These guys have always loved him. Like, his energy, his enthusiasm, his no-nonsense. And I think where he won a lot of the guys over, too, was this offseason. I mean, he's 70. He could have just said, man, all these new changes, that's crap, I'm out. But instead, he was one of the guys that was leading the charge, and other special t- team's coaches were coming to him about how he was, you know, he attacked it full on. And I think they have a lot of respect for how he does it. But, yeah, I mean, the guy, I mean, good for him. I mean, he doesn't ever want to do anything else. He doesn't have any other hobbies. And we were talking to him last year. And he's like, I don't know what I would do. Like, this is my life. And he's living a good life right now.
Top Halloween candy for Jeff Hathorn.
Take five.
Yes, Jeff. Great choice.
I mean, that is maybe the most underrated candy. You get chocolate, pretzel, little nougat is peanut butter in there. And what's not to like about the Take Five? And what I love about it is I put them in the bowl. Everybody goes for the Reese's and Snickers. And then after it's all over, there they all sit, just waiting for me. Unless a parent comes, then I give a different bowl out because the parents will go for the Take Five too.
Oh, so you're saying this is parental savvy when it comes to Take Fives?
That's what we call maturing.
So. Yes. It's taking that candy you had as a kid and then combining it into one delicious candy bar.
Jeff Hathorn, Take Five fan, and our sports director as part of the Hawk Report. Thank you, Jeff.
See you, boys.
It is 5:30. Now is the time to make that call to the Buell Insurance Agency. Get help with those premiums, 724-443-5610. Time for a little Coach's Corner, Donnie. Are you excited for the Coach's Corner?
I'm pumped up for Coach's Corner.
Bunch of Steelers coaches talking today. We'd have more of this for you. We have three clips today to choose from. There's a lot more back there. Perhaps we'll have a bonus Coach's Corner tomorrow. We had little audio issues. We had we had our tin can and string system trying to get these things sent the right way. And so yours truly did not have enough time to cut everything he wanted to cut out of them and play these little clips. Now, I'll give you a choice here. We have Pat Meyer for a clip talking about Broderick Jones. We have Tom Arth opining about what Russell Wilson has done thus far. And we have Zach Azani on Roman Wilson. Which would you like to hear first and discuss, Donnie?
Honestly, I actually want to start with Roman Wilson.
Okay. Here is Zach Azani talking about, he was asked a question about just how tough it is when you don't have much time on the field because of injury to get going up to speed.
It's very challenging. It's challenging for anybody, especially a rookie that's never played in the NFL. That's why in practice, we got to push them, and because it's not going to get easier on Sunday afternoon or Sunday evening. So it's very challenging, and that's part of my job is to throw him in situations out there that are uncomfortable for him. You know, I throw him at a position he's never played out there on purpose, just to show him that, hey, this could happen in a game where you got to back up all three positions and, you know, whatever the case may be. So, we're continuing to monitoring that, and what he can handle, what he can't when he comes back is going to be part of our job as well.
So, usually I always think of, like, the head coach sometimes can be the good cop in these situations, and the position coach is the bad cop who will tell it more like it is. They're working with the guy, and then the head coach might actually say, I guess it's usually, no, the dynamic usually is flipped. So, let me retract that, actually, Donnie. The head coach in these situations usually is the bad guy. I was thinking about it more in hockey terms, but it's the same even there. I just had my scripts flipped here in my head. Tomlin has been pretty dismissive, I would say, of Roman Wilson, wouldn't you? Like, when he's been asked about him, I would argue that there has been a negative tone to his commentary on Roman Wilson. Like, he's just a little tired of the fact that the guy can't get healthy enough to stay on the field. Zach Azani right there, who we know is not a shrinking violet when it comes to confrontation, given what he and George Pickens went through in training camp, that sounds a lot more... I'm not sure what the right word is here. That sounds a lot more empathetic to the player's plight here than anything Tomlin has said. We're putting him in situations where he's got to learn all three positions. He's got to do stuff he's never done before. But yet at no point there do I really hear like, yeah, you'll be seeing him on the field playing significant snaps. I still hear a guy who's pretty far away if they're still like trying to teach him all the various positions he might need to learn on the field.
I'm trying to remember. They didn't put a designation on a return date when they tossed him on IR a few days ago. So I think that may be a little bit telling. It's not like, oh, 4 weeks, he'll be back and, you know, he'll be practicing, and then maybe for the final stretch run, he'll be on the field. It does seem like, unfortunately, this dude's rookie year has been
a bust.
Totally wasted.
Yep.
We saw him play for, what, like 5 or 6 snaps in Las Vegas a few weeks ago. That's been pretty much it.
Never been targeted. Just run routes.
Yeah, I'm trying to even think, like, how many of those plays was he on the field for that were actually passes?
I'm actually not sure if he – I'd have to go back and look. I don't even know if, now that I said it out loud, and I might just be wrong. I remember him lining up in the slot on a play and going, hey, there he is, it's Roman Wilson. And I think it was just like a toss play.
And that was all
ran.
She wrote. Man. So, yeah, I mean, it sucks because this was a player that – I wouldn't say the expectations were super high for, but a middle-round rookie in a group that doesn't have a ton at receiver and really nothing at receiver outside of George Pickens. I mean, people have the stocks high for Van Jefferson and Calvin Austin, given what we've seen through a couple of games with Russell Wilson. But we got basically nothing out of a player that I think a lot of people at least expected something. Some sort of baseline. We have nothing.
It does, though, feel better, like, seeing Wilson get everybody involved. Russell, that is. This felt like a major issue for them that was going to percolate Roman Wilson. Like, wow, what a huge loss this is as far as what they intended for him to probably do this year and what he's actually going to do, which is either nothing or next to nothing. It feels a lot better to be talking about this, almost more in, like, the abstract. Like, oh, yeah, it could have been nice, but maybe he'll get right for next year and be good to go. Just because I watched them actually look like they could integrate 3 or 4 different receivers into the game plan effectively. Like, honestly, if your top 5 pass catchers right now is Pickens, Van Jefferson, Austin, and then Freiermuth, Washington, and then you sprinkle in the running backs here and there, I'm fine with that for now. I still would prefer they go get Darius Slayton, or maybe Kendrick Bourne is another name that's now going to be more available to them that might be out there to go get. I cannot believe I'm saying this. I am somewhat at peace with how they have it set right now. I think they need more, but I don't think it's like the difference between me taking them seriously and not at that position.
Yeah, I mean, I really would like
Slayton would be nice. Slayton would be nice because he cooked them, and I think we all get like suckered in, but he's also done that to other teams this year.
Now, we can also think about that in the scope of when the Steelers try to find someone or they talk glowingly of someone, they love when a player has a big game against them. Like, oh, man, that guy came in here and did this against us.
If he can do that against us, think what he could do for us.
Yeah, like Mike Williams only had the one catch. It was a 4th-down catch, but just as another example.
Slayton beat them all over the field. He had a down the middle, a post, you know, a little skinny post in the middle of the field. He had a sideline shot that he got. He had an intermediate length? No, he had a couple
of the
middle.
He had the one broken tackle in the middle of the field that turned into a long game.
I mean, if Daniel Jones throws the ball on time, like Troy Aikman pointed out that he didn't, he's probably got another catch and, what, another 20 yards on that play. Minka made a good play to jar it loose. Like I said, at peace doesn't mean content, like fully content with them settling for nothing. I think they could get away with it. I'd prefer they not try to get away with it because I think that they could really help themselves in that regard. All right, Tom Arth on Russell or Pat Meyer on Broderick?
We'll save Russell for last, so let's go with Pat Meyer.
All right.
Broderick's been awesome. I mean, his attitude, he's nothing but listening. He just got to learn. He's got to focus. You know, I think he's just got to focus. Each and every play, he plays a lot of good plays. You watch him and it's like, wow, he does some really good things. And I think it's just more him just, again, young, hasn't played a whole NFL season. He's 23 years old. It just, you know, just he's going to grow. But the thing that Broderick is a confident kid. He plays hard. He loves the game. You just got to continue to learn. We just got to get him to learn it faster.
See, that's a little troubling to me because he doesn't make it sound like he's a malcontent at all. The opposite. Good attitude, like, generally good work habits. So does he lose focus just kind of at random there? Like, is it a youthful thing? They don't really paint the picture of an immature player there. They paint the picture of a guy who's easy to coach and wants to get better but isn't getting better fast
enough. Says he needs to learn the game faster.
Yeah, like we need to teach him and he needs to pick it up faster. Then if that's focused, I don't really know how to fix that. I'm not sure what you do there.
That may also, again, be where we came back on position coaches, good cop, and he's going to speak highly of the player no matter how he's looking.
So I didn't cut this, but I did listen to it, and I probably should have cut it. There was another question asked, would being on the left side, like taking reps at left tackle, help him focus? The implication being, like, is he not focused because he's frustrated that he's not getting snaps where he was supposed to play? And Pat Meyer did not, like, openly just crap on that idea. But what he did, he's like, he kind of hemmed and hawed, and then he said, Dan Moore is our left tackle, which everyone knows because he can't play right tackle. But I thought it was kind of funny that Meyer got asked that question the way he did, and he did not just squash it and say, no, that wouldn't help. That makes me think that there's something there, that he is still like a little bit ticked off, thought he was going to be their left tackle this year, and has never really had a chance to earn that job.
Yeah, like here we are 2 years into his career, and
I'm playing out of position.
Yeah, and before we know it, you know, they're going to have to make that decision on the fifth-year option for Broderick Jones.
It sounds like they're going to make it based on. It sounds like they're going to have to make it based on one season, presumably at left tackle. All this for Dan Moore, who again was highly graded by PFFs. I don't want to hear it. I know. Here's Tom Arth, quarterback's coach, on Russell Wilson and specifically this downfield element to the offense.
I think Russ has played very well. And, you know, you talk about, you know, pushing the ball down the field. I think that's been a strength of Russ's, you know, throughout his career. And, you know, certainly has been that, you know, the first couple of weeks. I think we felt that. And, you know, the opportunities that our guys have gotten down the field to make plays, you know, Russ is giving them those opportunities, and they've made the plays. So it's been a big plus for us.
I just think he throws such a catchable ball compared to Fields down on those shots. That ball just drops out of the air. The Calvin, like here, honestly, the Calvin Austin touchdown, man, strikes me as one of the classic, like, this is how he threw it, this is how Fields might have made. Let's just say Fields sees the same play there. I do think he tries to throw it on more of a line. And Wilson just
More of a line drive.
Wilson just laid that thing up there like you're playing football at recess and your buddy puts one right on the money. You're running under it. You're at full gallop, but that ball just drops right into the basket. It's just so much easier to catch the ball. It is. I hate having to admit that I was this wrong about it because I just thought Fields had done enough to earn the job and keep the job. But I think you're seeing on like plays like that what big-time quarterbacking looks like. And then when he needed to throw a laser beam to Pickens, he did. And you know what? Somebody pointed this out to me on Twitter. I didn't really think of this, but it's true. Think about some of the people who were like, right when Russ came back and was really practicing and we got the inkling that he was going to take the job back, some of those guys in the skill room, like some of the pass catchers on this team, I think Freiermuth said it. I think some other guys said it. They all kind of said like nice things about Russ that didn't have to be said necessarily. They all talked about, you know, he's really sharp. He's really decisive. All this stuff. I kind of paid that no mind and just thought it was lip service. Maybe they knew something we didn't there. Guys don't have to go and put themselves out there for a player like that, but they did in his case.
It is also refreshing, like it is with a lot of the aspects of the offense, and this isn't as much of a knock at Justin Fields as it is some of the other quarterbacks that we saw since Big Ben's departure, because yeah, Fields has plenty of stuff to learn. He still did good things though, and he did, no matter who it was against, he put this team in a good spot in Wilson's absence. It just feels like when you're watching the game and Russell Wilson has the football in his hands through two games here, that a good decision is going to be made. Like, I don't have to see the football get thrown and think, oh no, where's this going? And then it's like we're lucky that a Steeler player comes down with it.
Yeah, I thought he made one questionable decision. It was the tipped ball to Austin in the end zone. But, I mean, even that, again, is not – that's – crying over like a very small thing. That's quibbling and